Good morning, everyone.
Looking this morning at some material from the last few Daily Master Course lessons. 2 days ago, the Merging with Shiva lesson talked about self-realization is in several stages. And the paragraph presents three stages. So I'm going to give you a quiz here. Just think in your own mind, mental quiz, what are the three stages that Gurudeva would refer to as stages of self-realization? See if you get them right. Oh, the first one, realizing oneself as a soul rather than a mind and intellectual and emotional type or a worthless person. Gives satisfaction, security, and this is the starting point. We'll come back to each of these three. So that's the first one. Second one, realization of the self as Satchit-Ananda gives contentment, a release from all emotions and thoughts of the external world. And the nerve system responds to the energies flowing through the Vishuddha and Anahata chakras. That's the fifth and the fourth chakras. It's the second one. Then we have the third one. Realizing the self that transcends time, form, and space. Parashiva is a razor-edged experience, cutting all bonds, reversing individual awareness, such as looking out from the self rather than looking into the self. Reversing means, normally we think of, here I am and I'm going within. This is, I'm within and I guess it's time to come out. It's reversing. So those are the three stages of self-realization. And it's a useful statement because we don't always run into it in Gurudeva's teaching. Sometimes he just talks about one or the other. He doesn't necessarily go through all three. But what he's clearly stating here is that it's a natural progression. One naturally leads to the other, which naturally leads to the other. Then also in the lessons in the last few days, Dancing with Shiva lesson one, we all remember that. That just came around, what was it, yesterday. Dancing with Shiva, lesson one. Who am I? Where did I come from? Rishis proclaim that we are not our body, mind, or emotions. We are divine souls on a wondrous journey. We came from God, live in God, and are evolving into oneness with God. We are in truth, the truth we seek. Talking about this verse, I make the statement, the book is called Dancing with Shiva. So naturally, what would you think the first verse would be about? Shiva, right? But it's about the soul. So it shows how important it is that we need to focus not just on something separate from ourselves, but on ourselves and on our spiritual identity. So right in this first sloka, Gurudeva is emphasizing the first stage of realization. We need to see ourselves as a soul. An interesting story about that. Must have been last year. I've been to the recently created Yogaswami Theravada Nilayam in Colombo, Sri Lanka, 3 years now. And gave three different talks. First year I gave a talk on Sivathondu, being of service, which is one of Yogaswami's very strong messages, being the servant of God. Second year I prepared a talk on this point, that you're not the body, mind, and emotion. You're a divine being. And it's not only the first verse, in Dancing with Shiva, it's the first letter that Yogaswami in Yogaswami's letters. So I was quoting them both. And quoting Gurudeva, and then I was quoting Yogaswami, says, you're almost the same thing. You're not the body, mind, or the intellect. You're the Atma. It's Tomo. It says, Nanyar, who am I? Then it says, Ni Atma. Can't get more simple than that. You are the soul. But what was very interesting is, between the first year I came and the second year I came, they had written something on the wall. It wasn't there the first year. The first year it was just opening. Second year it had been there a year. And they had written this letter on the wall. My Tamil script was adequate enough to figure out that that was the letter I was quoting. Ni Atma. I said, oh, Nanyar. It's up on the wall. So it shows it's very important to both Yogaswami and Gurudeva, the idea that you're a soul. Well, what does that mean? Gurudeva explains it quite nicely here in this first quote we had. You're a soul rather than a mind, an intellectual and emotional type, or a worthless person. Well, lots of people these days are very active in the intellect. And I was talking to one young man recently, and he was saying he's always thinking. There's not a waking moment that he's not thinking about something. And I told him, well, I'm never thinking. Unless I want to be. But he was so involved in the intellect that he didn't really know how to stop it. And of course, that's not good. We look at the intellect as a tool. It's like the internet. If you're glued to the screen all day, jumping around from website to website, obviously it's a problem, but if you say, I need to know something, you go, you find something, you find it, and then you come out of the internet, you're using it as a tool, a very controlled tool. So the intellect should be the same thing. It should be a tool that we turn on and off to accomplish a specific task. It just shouldn't be running all day long. There's no need for it. And then emotions, obviously, the ups and downs of emotions are very distracting from inner life, so we need to learn to bring those under reasonable control. And a worthless person means a negative self-concept. So sometimes we grow up thinking other people are better than we are and we're not very good at this and that. We have a negative self-concept. And of course it comes from what our parents say, what our teachers say. It's not something we created on our own. They helped us create it. They were co-creators of this negative self-concept. So if that's the case, we have to work ourselves out of it. And Gurudeva gives us a very fine tool for that, which is called affirmations. And we can change a negative self-concept into a positive one over a period of a few years by regularly using affirmations. But we don't want to stop there. But we do need a positive self-concept. You can't really move from a negative self-concept to realizing that you're the soul. It's too big a step. You've got to move from a negative self-concept to a positive self-concept, and from a positive self-concept into the idea that you're a divine being. So we're moving on to the second one, Sat-Chit-Ananda. Gurudeva says, in my experience, the Anahata Chakra is the resting place of dynamic complacency. Interesting phrase to ponder, dynamic complacency. Normally, complacency is not dynamic, but this is dynamic complacency, which I think you could really say is another way of saying contentment. Of thoughtful perception and quietude. This is Anahata, the fourth chakra. Those of a lower nature arriving in the bloom of this chakra are released from turbulent emotions, conflicting thoughts, and disturbances. So that's pretty good, right? Imagine being free of all those turbulent emotions, conflicting thoughts, and disturbances. This, to many, is the end of the path, attaining peace or shanti. Once one attains shanti, as just described in my experience, this marks the beginning of the path, or part two, the second level. It is from here that the practices of Raja Yoga take hold once shanti is attained. In the Anahata Chakra and Vishuddha Chakra, Satchit Ananda, the all-pervasive being of oneness, of the underlying being of the universe, is attained and experienced. So that's a clear goal there, and I wrote about it in the publisher's desk. In the last few years, I said an alternative to happiness. Remember that one? That was talking about this idea of realm of the Anahata Chakra. Happiness, when it comes from external sources, is followed by, guess what? Sadness, right? The coin has two sides. You look at one, then you look at the other. So happiness goes down to sadness, or joy goes down to sorrow. When it comes from the outside world, we can't sustain it. It has an opposite. Gurudev has some nice writings on that. Well, we're looking for something that's more stable, and that, of course, is this chakra, the inner experience of being content, permanent contentment. So if we can free ourselves from the disturbances of the lower chakras, the first three, then we can live in that state. And as Gurudeva says, congratulations. Now you can begin part two. He doesn't say congratulations, you're finished. He says congratulations, now you can start the serious work. Third one. It is the truth spoken by Vedic rishis as the self within man, attainable through control of the mind and purification. Gurudev's point, which I should really mention here. It is not a matter of becoming the self, but of realizing that you never were not the self. What is the self? Parashiva. So when Gurudev talks of Parashiva, the way I translated into simple English is transcendent source of omnipresence consciousness. So omnipresent consciousness, that's something we can imagine. You know, we're conscious through our body, and Shiva's conscious through the universe, and so are we. If we can find that part of us that is conscious through the universe, that's something the intellect can grasp. But that consciousness that's present throughout the universe has a source, and that source is transcendent, meaning it's beyond any possible description. But it's a simple way of looking at it. We see what is being sustained, which is omnipresent consciousness, and that which sustains it is the transcendent source, or Parashiva. And Gurudev's point here is you're already that. It's not a matter of becoming the self. And that's what I stress, you know, through my analogy of the pond of water. You know, I won't repeat that one again, but it's part of us is hidden from ourselves, and that part is called Parashiva, and even the part of being omnipresent is hidden to some degree, but not as well concealed, shall we say. How do we find it? It's attainable through control of the mind and purification. So those are two. Purification of what? Purification of the mind is what's meant. It's called chitta shuddhi. In Sanskrit, chitta shuddhi. And control of the mind is, as in the Yoga Sutras, chitta svritti naroda. Restraining the mental activities. Control of the mind and purification. Purification is another control of the mind. It's just, it's the what we call the subconscious mind. What are we purifying? We're purifying the subconscious mind. So we're working with the mind. The conscious mind is that which thinks, generates mental activity. The subconscious mind is there too. And it's the reservoir of everything that's happened to us in this and past lives. And it's in itself, it generates mental activity. So, but it also needs to be purified. So the simplest way of describing, I have a whole talk on that. What is the purpose of Hindu practices? To purify the mind. That's a very simple way of looking and explaining. Why do we go to the temple? Purify the mind. Why do we have a homa? To purify the mind. Why do we do seva? To purify the mind. You know, it's a very simple answer to young people as to the purpose. Why do we need to purify the mind? Because it's impure. Why is it impure? Because we didn't act wisely in the past. Very simple explanation. And, well, why are we doing that? To find the deeper self within ourselves. Otherwise, we just keep going round and round and round. Eventually, we get tired of the earth, and if we're not careful, might not be here, huh? So watch out for global warming. We could end up without a place to reincarnate. Oh, we don't want to do that. Maybe global warming will motivate us to move ahead more quickly with our moksha. Anyway, that's the idea, very simply said, is self-realization in three stages. Realizing oneself as a soul, realizing oneself as Satchitananda, omnipresent consciousness, and realizing oneself as the source or sustainer of that omnipresent consciousness. So thank you very much. We have a parade coming up for those who can stay. We have a parade when we start our ratals. We have, in Gurudeva's system, we have three ratals instead of six seasons. Why do we have three instead of six? Because Gurudeva only wrote three books. He didn't write six. That's the answer, right? If he wrote six books, we'd probably have six ratals.